The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Lost in the Edit by Bonnie Gerstenlauer. The rain was a persistent drummer beating a rhythm on the grimy asphalt of the alley. It was a rhythm Jack Malone knew well. It was the rhythm of secrets, of late-night deals gone wrong, of a city that never washed clean, no matter how hard the heavens wept. The neon sign from the Blue Dahlia bar flickered, casting a sickly pink glow on the wet brickwork and the unfortunate stiff lying at his feet. Classic case. A dame, a deal, a .38 caliber goodbye. Jack knelt, the brim of his fedora dripping, and was about to check the man's pockets when the world went sideways. It wasn't a sound, it was a feeling. The air shimmered, tasting suddenly of ozone and sugar plums. The grimy brick wall to his left dissolved into a cascade of shimmering rainbow hue. From the possible portal stepped a young woman. She wasn't a dame. Dames were all sharp angles and sharper attitudes. This woman was a symphony of soft curves and pastel silk. Her gown, a confection of sky blue and silver, seemed to repel the city's grime. A tiara of sparkling diamonds sat atop a cascade of golden curls, and her eyes were those of a mark who had never seen a back-alley deal. They were full of bewildering, doe-like innocence. A small blue bird with a disturbingly cheerful expression chirped on her shoulder. "Oh, my!" she gasped, her voice like wind chimes. She curtsied, a gesture so out of place in this gutter that Jack almost laughed. "Pardon me, good sir, but this doesn't look like the Whispering Woods at all. Have you seen a talking white rabbit by any chance? He's dreadfully late for the royal ball." Jack stared, his mind struggling to categorize her. She didn't fit. She was a splash of vibrant, impossible color in his monochrome world. The only talking rabbits in this town are the ones you see after three shots of cheap whiskey, lady, and you're in the wrong part of a story for a ball. The bluebird chirped again, a series of melodic notes. "Pip says you seem very sad." The princess, she had to be a princess, translated earnestly. "Is it because of that poor man sleeping on the ground?" Before Jack could formulate a response to the sheer absurdity of the situation, the world twisted again. The opposite wall of the alley didn't dissolve, it glitched. Bricks pixelated and reformed into a jagged hole of rusted corrugated metal. A low hum vibrated through the ground, and a figure scrambled through the opening, landing in a low crouch. This one was the polar opposite of the princess. She was dressed in patched-up tactical gear, her face smeared with grease and dirt. A pair of night-vision goggles were pushed up on her forehead, revealing short, jagged-cut black hair and eyes that were hard, cynical, and constantly scanning for threats. She held a strange-looking weapon, a contraption of scavenged parts and raw power. "Sector 7 is compromised," she hissed, more to herself than to them. She clocked Jack, then the princess, her eyes narrowing. "Who are you? Resistance? Corpsec? And what are you wearing?" she barked at Alara. "You'll be spotted by a scrapper drone a click away in that getup." "A click?" Princess Alara just blinked. "Is that a type of cricket?" The new arrival, Kira, looked at Jack. "Control the civilian. What's the sit rep? Where's the extraction point? Jack pushed himself to his feet, pinching the bridge of his nose. The dead body was still on the pavement, completely ignored. The rain was still falling. But his case, his city, his entire genre had just been invaded. He was stuck in an alley with a fairy tale princess and a soldier from a world of scrap metal and surveillance drones. There is no sit rep, Jack said, his voice a low growl. There's a stiff, a princess looking for a rabbit, me and you, soldier. I'm a detective, and I've got a headache the size of City Hall. Suddenly, the alley floor beneath them changed. The asphalt softened and swirled, the gray giving way to a vibrant emerald green. Grass sprouted between the cracks. The dead body, the focus of Jack's entire night, dissolved into a shower of sparkling dust that floated up and faded away. The three of them stood in stunned silence on a patch of impossible meadow, trapped between a flickering neon sign and a wall of rusted metal, under a sky that couldn't decide if it wanted to be a gloomy, starless night or a brilliant, sunlit blue. Right, Jack Malone muttered, pulling the collar of his trench coat together. New case. Find the author of this story and give him a piece of my mind. A small rabbit hopped past them, mumbling to himself. Jack watched, his eyes narrowing, as the rabbit produced a gold packet watch. I'm late, the creature complained in crisp, precise English, then bounded straight through the flickering wall of metal, vanishing completely. I must follow that rabbit, the princess said, running after it. Jack cursed under his breath, then turned to the rebel, whose jaw was clenched tight. So do interdimensional soldiers usually cope with magical rabbits on their missions, or is this a first for you? Before she could answer, a figure strode into view, clad in a tailored white shirt spattered with ink, thumbing through a tattered notebook, a confused expression on his face. Jack's hand went to his holster instinctively. The soldier moved forward, training her strange-looking weapon on the newcomer, demanding his identification without lowering her aim. Whoa, hold up, the man said, brow furrowed. I'm just here looking for my pen. I can't seem to keep my chapters straight. Suddenly his gaze shifted away from the two of them. What the heck is the deal with that wall? I was about to ask you the same thing, Jack said. The man, about to respond, suddenly disappeared into thin air. The rebel cursed as the notebook fluttered to the ground, laying open on the fresh glass. Picking it up, she glanced through it. I can't make heads or tails out of this gibberish, she said, shaking her head. Suddenly, the pages rearranged themselves, shifting lines of text into diagrams that glowed faintly. The grass below their feet disappeared and morphed into an unknown metal. There was no longer sky overhead. Instead, pipes twisted above them, hissing with steam as gears groaned ominously all around them. What in the world? Jack stammered just as a small blue bird fluttered by. Pip, where have you gone to now? An overly cheerful voice rang out. Footsteps approached as Alara emerged from behind a large brass gear. Oh, hello again, she said, as we stood there staring at her, stunned by her sudden appearance. I'm out of here. You two are on your own, the rebel said, heading toward a door. As she reached for the handle, it spun away, vanishing into the shifting wall behind her. Crap, she cursed, running toward another door. Without warning, a metallic voice boomed overhead, listing the names of unfinished chapters the author had started but never resolved, the words echoing through the chamber as steam clouded everyone's vision. Robots wearing strange reflective clothing burst into the room, their oddly jointed arms whirring as each one brandished weapons shaped like oversized fountain pens, spraying ink in wild arcs across the trembling metal floor, causing a hissing sound as it hit the hot brass gears. I'm really missing that stiff in the alley right now, Jack yelled. diving towards the giant cock by Lara's feet as ink rained down from above, spattering the cuff of his pants. "Don't you have any smarts, girl?" he said, grabbing Kira by the arm, dragging her down with him as a jet of ink sliced through the air just inches overhead. "Have you seen a curious white rabbit?" the princess yelled from across the room, where she was hiding underneath the metallic table, a small bluebird sitting atop. "Enough with the white rabbit BS. Can't you see we're under attack?" the soldier yelled back. Once again, the walls glitched and cement replaced metal as the three of them were violently thrusted back into Jack's world. "Thank God," he said, kissing the ground. The two women stood a few feet away. "Oh, wonderful. The dames are here, too," he said, standing up. He wanted to get as far away from them as he could. "Pardon me, sir, but I appear to be lost," Princess Alara said, running up to me, grabbing me by the arm. "Can you help me find my way home?" "Sorry, Toots, I've got a case to solve. You're on your own," Jack said, yanking his arm away from her. He walked down the alley without glancing back. "That's right. Keep walking. I don't need anything from you. But you know what, Aho? This pretty little princess here, she sure does. So man up. Get back here and help her," Kira yelled, aiming her weapon at me. Jack stopped, letting out a frustrated sigh as thunder rumbled overhead. "Okay, fine. I guess we better figure this out so we don't keep going in and out of each other's stories." An unnatural green light flashed at the end of the narrow alley. A warped shape emerged from the darkness, shimmering with the hue of sick neon rain. The author stepped forward with pen and paper in hand. "It's about time you showed up," Jack said. The three of us explained that our worlds kept merging into one another, warping our realities. We told him how we wanted each of our stories to end. The princess told the author she wanted to catch the white rabbit. Kiara said she wanted to win her epic battle, and I told him I had to solve the mystery of the dead stiff in the alley. The author listened, smiling, then scribbled a new sentence, his eyes blazing. He tore the page from his notebook just as reality rippled around our feet. Moments before each of us returned to our stories, we saw the words the author had written at the bottom of the page. It read, "And they lived happily ever after. The end." This next story is by a gentleman named Daniel Rogers, and he has written a series of short stories. These are really short, short stories, about 4 pages long. If you like these, I'll continue using his short stories. If not, let me know. Drop a line at beyond3x5@gmail.com. The first one I'm reading for today, by Daniel Rogers, Crash Landing Sucks. Crash landing sucks, but at least we're still breathing. Well, at least I am. Alara doesn't breathe, but a quick diagnostic check showed her systems functioning at optimal levels. We checked the Star Cruiser next, finding minor damage. If it weren't for the fact that our dilanium deteriorated when we ran into that solar storm, we would have been able to fly off this primitive planet without any trouble. But our dilanium did deteriorate, making our Star Cruiser as useful as a paperweight. Dilanium is a fairly ambiguous mineral on planets with oxygenized atmospheres, but unfortunately, not all planets with oxygenated atmospheres contain dilanium. Take Earth, for example. It contains zero, zilch, nada. This planet looks like Earth, but it better not be exactly like it, or we're screwed. An extensive scan of the area revealed a small amount of dilanium not far from here, in a heavily populated city. Not the best place. Remote and desolate would have been better, but beggars can't be choosers. But before we could go looking for the dilanium, Alora pointed out a more pressing problem. "We need to discover what type of clothing, money, and language the locals use," Alora said. "We'll never get anywhere near the Dalenium looking like we do." "Any suggestions?" I asked. "We must secretly scan their attire, record their language, and scan their money. Once we enter the data into the replicator, we'll be able to blend in." "That's a good plan, but I think we should head out now while we have daylight." "Negative. I need to go alone and retrieve the necessary data." "But I'm the captain, and I say we go now." "How do you expect to evade notice in broad daylight? Are you trained in reconnaissance?" She had a point. "I'm a surveyor, not a spy. I have no idea how to evade notice." "Are you trained in reconnaissance?" I didn't want to hit below the belt, but sometimes a captain has to put his co-pilot in her place. "I've fought in 24 wars. 24, you say? Can anyone say dumbstruck? I had no idea. What kind of android did they assign to me? It took a moment, but I collected myself. No matter how many wars she fought in, the company made me captain, and as such, it was my job to lead. I still think we should go together." "I don't see how your plan will work. My plan has a 100% chance of success." "I'm sure my plan does too, and even if it doesn't, it's what we're going to do." We put on our chameleon suits, a lightweight outerwear made of hexagonal digital scales that bend light in such a way as to make the wearer match their surrounding landscape, basically making us invisible. We armed ourselves with stun guns and scanners for collecting data. Alora activated the Star Cruiser's chameleon shield to hide it from the locals and retracted the ladder just in case. We wouldn't want a local snooping around our ship if they happened to walk through the shield. It only took about an hour before we came upon a family farming their land. Alora motioned for me to turn on my suit, which I did, but she didn't have to tell me. Captains give orders, not co-pilots. She had already turned on her suit and began recording their conversations. I got close enough to scan the oldest male's clothing. The scanner quietly did its job, but regrettably I did not. My foot kicked a small rock across the old man's path. He noticed and paused. He looked around, puzzled, then called out to the young man near him. I didn't need to know the language to guess what he said. It probably went like this. "What the heck was that?" Although the suit makes me invisible, it doesn't stop me from kicking rocks. I stood still, afraid to move. Alora came to my rescue. She shook a small tree near her. It did the trick. The two guys shook their head and returned to work, believing it must have been the wind. That wasn't my finest moment, but a leader must shake it off and get back to work. I carefully made my way to the house and quietly scanned the woman's clothing while she washed clothes in a huge stone pot. Now, when I say quietly, I mean real quiet. I didn't even breathe. However, that proved to be a bad mood. Forced to gulp a large amount of air, the intake made more noise than I would have believed if I weren't there to hear it. The woman stopped washing, jerked her head, and stared right at me. I've got to stop doing this. Crazy thoughts entered my brain when I'm super stressed, and I'm super stressed right now. So I actually thought about booing like a ghost, but then the thought of Alora chewing me out for speaking made me forget the stupid idea. I don't even know if the locals believe in ghosts. So instead of booing, I backed out of the house and almost made it to Alora before tripping on a shovel. I never saw it. The thud of my 180-pound, 6-foot-1-inch clumsy body resonated throughout the little farm. It sounded like an earthquake to me. All three locals stopped and stared at the shovel, which had moved quite a bit when I tripped over it. I crawled on my hands and knees from the crash site until I reached Alora, who pulled me to my feet. "I told you." It's all she said to me until we made it back to the Star Cruiser. "You know, I am the captain," I said while waiting for the ladder to lower. Allura waited for the ladder to extend fully, then climbed into the stip. She didn't talk for an hour. She downloaded her recordings into the ship's mainframe and began translating. By the sound of it, she cracked the local language. After that, she grabbed my scanner without asking, I might add, and downloaded my scans into the replicator. I was surprised when she began replicating money. I never scanned any. How did you get scans of money? While you were gasping for air, I took the opportunity to scan some lying on the table. I made it back to the tree while you were tripping all over the place. I don't know how we didn't get caught. You certainly tried hard enough. Ever since my boss assigned you to me, I've been playing second fiddle. You're a better pilot. Oh, and by the way, thanks for saving us. It was the best piloting I've ever seen. Allura is incapable of being surprised, but I think I got her this time. She thanked me, then waited for me to continue. Where was I? I asked. Second fiddle. Yes, you're a better pilot, better spy, better linguist, better fighter. And I'm sure if I thought hard, I could find dozens of other things you're better at. It's maddening. Allura softened her expression, not an emotional response, but a calculated one. I apologize for making you feel inferior simply because you are. I could find different methods of performing that will not upset your ego. What did I expect from an android? I shrugged my shoulders and laughed. My ego thanks you. Night came and my comfy bed called to me. We'll have to get some dilanium eventually, but for right now, Allura pretending not to be better than me and a good night's sleep sounds like a win in my book. And that was the first story by Daniel Rogers. The second one is called Screaming Like a Little Girl. The monster's hot, steamy breath smelled like decayed skunk. My stomach churned and I almost lost my breakfast, but that would be disastrous, so I covered my mouth and forced it down. My chameleon suit can keep me from being seen, but it can't hide, you know. The giant tiger-like creature sharpened its claws on the other side of the massive tree. I had chosen to hide behind it. Even as a kid, I was never any good at finding hiding places, and I was usually the first one found. Actually, I'm not good at doing anything on this alien planet. I should have ordered Allura to find water for our hydrogen generator, but no, I'm Captain Williams. I must lead by example. My promotion is going to get me killed. The monstrous beast grew bored of sharpening its claws and meandered far enough from my tree that I dared to take another peek. I gasped on the inside, though not on the outside. I've made that mistake once before, and I have no plans on repeating it. The size of the monster made me internally gasp. It would have made an ancient Spartan wet his tunic. Almost as big as an elephant, but unlike an elephant, its short hair alternated between brown and orange stripes, like a Bengal tiger. He also sported a black mane and a tail that ended in a ball of spikes, which was both intimidating and reluctantly cool. I'm sure it would be great for killing maroon galactic surveyors like myself. As I sized up the monster, he paused and sniffed the air. I felt a breeze come from behind. He must have caught my scent. I ducked behind my tree. His heavy paws cracked limbs and dried leaves. In moments, he closed in on my tree with his putrid breath. I almost did what an ancient Spartan might have done, but then I remembered that animals are really good at smelling, you know, which is also another thing my chameleon suit can't do anything about. The monster sniffed loudly as it partially rounded the trunk. If I don't do something, I'm going to be eaten. And wouldn't that be ironic, to survive a crash landing just to be eaten by Tigerzilla? I looked around and spied a rock and threw it as far as I could without moving too much. The monster bolted towards the rock. Panicking is in my nature, and so is running for my life. Bolting in the opposite direction of the monster, I immediately heard the beast run after me. My suit makes me invisible, but the beast could easily smell my fear, and by the sound of it, Tigerzilla was gaining on me. I began to scream, for a lack of anything constructive to do. I spotted a hole in the side of a giant tree, just large enough for me, but too small for the monster. If it were even deep enough out of claw range, I could wait the beast out. Unfortunately, there was no way to know until I get inside, but I had no other option. I certainly wasn't going to outrun him. I dove into the hole, scrambling to get as far back as I could. The monster's arms soon followed, pawing the ground and sides of the tree. It reached farther. I pressed myself against the tree trunk. The arm came short. I sighed and relaxed a bit. Now all I had to do was wait. After evaluating my situation, the waiting game turned out to be more like a game of chicken, with only one ship able to move. I couldn't go anywhere. The monster gave up pawing and seemed content to lie outside for me. Anger welled up inside and shouts burst forth. "Go away, you brute! Leave! Shoo! Move it!" Nothing. The monster didn't even raise its head. Next came desperation. Shouts of help poured out until my voice went hoarse. Collapsing in utter hopelessness, I balled up in the fetal position, resigned to die of dehydration or starvation or some other kind of death that ends with ation. But then a familiar voice rang out, Alora's voice. I tried to shout to warn her of the monster, but the beast got up and ran towards her. Forcing my legs to run, I chased after the beast, but to my shock, I found Alora petting the wretched thing. "What is going on?" I said. Alora commanded the beast to sit like an obedient dog. It did. She turned to me. I heard a little girl screaming for help. "A little girl?" I didn't hear a girl. "Yes, but unless a little girl is hiding in the same hole you came from, it must have been you." My defenses went up. "I'll have you know, in most circles, my scream is considered manly." She raised an eyebrow. "Were you screaming about this guy?" "Why, yes. Monsters who are about to eat me tend to make me scream." "He won't eat you or anybody. Haven't you seen creatures like him? I've seen dozens since we crash-landed yesterday." "Are you telling me there's more of them? What kind of planet is this?" "He's friendly. He was playing with you." "Yeah, sure he was." "We need to hurry. We don't want the hydrogen generator to run out of water. The last thing we need is for the chameleon shield to power down." Alora dismissed the creature and he ran out of sight to who knows where. I've never known an android with such confidence. It makes being the leader very difficult. Most androids are barely competent and rarely able to make decisions on their own. You're unique. I must admit, I've grossly underestimated you. It's because you're used to working with androids built on Earth. Weren't you built on Earth? No. I waited for her to elaborate. We walked in silence for several minutes until I couldn't take it any longer. So where are you from? Outside the Union. And that's all she said. I couldn't get any more information. She's not an ordinary android, and considering our predicament, that's probably a good thing, even if it means humble pie for me. We were getting close to our star cruiser, but I couldn't remember exactly where it crashed. Where did we park? Park? Alora shook her head. You are a strange man. She pointed to a spot in the middle of a grain field. Over there. Cool. That's where I thought it was. You're unbelievable. And that's how we ended our adventure for the day. With a hydrogen generator loaded with plenty of water, we can safely head out to hunt for delanium. But that's tomorrow. Tonight we rest. And if I'm lucky, I can annoy Alora a bit. Okay, I'm going to try one more. Maybe two. Office for Suspicious Soldiers by Daniel Rogers. I've never heard of Drock 9. The soldier didn't even try to hide his suspicion. How far did you say you traveled? He said as he motioned for a couple of soldiers to join him. My tongue felt too big for my mouth, and my limbs went all wobbly like they were made of jello. It's a good thing Alora can't panic, being an android and all, because God knows I'm doing enough for the both of us, and the soldier sees it. A month, Alora calmly answered. That's a long way, the soldier began rifling through our sacks. What brings you to Lithia? We created a cover story before leaving our wrecked star cruiser in case we ran into any inquisitive locals. We came here to buy seeds because for years of drought dwindled our supply to almost nothing. We couldn't say why we were really here, to find delanium to power our wrecked star cruiser. This explanation didn't convince the soldier. He pointed to a room built into the massive entrance to the city. I'm sure he must have heard my heart beating 1,000 miles per hour. It's my fault we're in this predicament. I can't help it. I'm a stinking surveyor, for crying out loud, not a spy. A belief in providential help came young in life, and what happened next only bolstered that belief. A woman intercepted us on our way to the jail, or barracks, or office for suspicious soldiers. I'm not sure which, but I knew I didn't want to go in there. She commanded respect and politely asked the soldier for a minute of his time. "What are you doing with my guests?" she asked. "This one," the soldier pointed to me, "is all jittery and nervous. I'm about to find out why. Perhaps I can help." Her demeanor and grace mesmerized me. My heart slowed, and a strange tranquility overcame me. Her purple robes and white silk scarf, or sash, suggested wealth, and she had to be an important person by the way the soldier treated her. She continued, "They wrote to me about a room for them to stay in before leaving. I'm sure they told you about buying seeds. Well, it's true. Now, this gentleman here might be behaving a bit odd, but you must admit, you can be intimidating." The smile she gave him could have melted the hardest heart. It definitely did something to my heart. "I suppose I can be a bit intimidating," the soldier said, barely masking his masculine pride. He nodded, and the soldiers released us. "You need to be careful," he said to me. "I've got my eyes on you. Don't get out of line or else." We left with her without knowing why she helped us or how she knew our cover story. She said nothing, but quickly led us from the main road through several side roads and finally into a narrow alley. "We're not out of the woods yet," the woman said as she began feeling along the building wall. "It's here somewhere." Her hands pressed and rubbed along the wall like she was trying to find something. "Ah, there it is." She pressed firmly and an unseen door opened. She held it for us to enter. "Who are you?" Alora asked, "and why should we trust you?" "I'm Freena, and you should trust me because I know you're an android." Androids might not get shocked, but I was shocked all over the place. How in the world did the primitive woman know? And what do we do about it? Do we pretend not to know what she's talking about or go inside? "Explain what you mean," Alora asked. "Okay, we're going with the pretend scenario. I've seen your kind before. Shallow breathing, expressionless face, unnatural blinking. It's all right. I'm a friend." Alora pulled me aside out of earshot. "Drew, I need your human intuition. Do we trust her?" She needed me? The power went straight to my head as I straightened to my full 6 feet 1 inch, pulled my shoulders back, and acted like a pompous windbag. "I believe we can." We entered through the hidden door into a large room. A table sat in the middle with several chairs around it, and large overstuffed pillows lined the walls. "Have a seat," the woman pointed to the pillows. "I owe you an explanation." "It would be nice," I said. "Starting with how you knew we came here to buy seeds, oh, and that you know about androids." she laughed. A reasonable request. She sat on a pillow. I saw you before you entered the city. When I noticed your features, she looked at Alora, I knew you had to be an android, so I followed you until the soldiers began pestering you. I overheard your seed story. When they began to haul you away, I knew I had to do something. I own 2 inns, so the soldiers had no problem believing my story. And the android part? Freena could hear my impatience. She flashed me that melting smile. My friend is an android. And the shocking continues. My jaw dropped. This world hasn't developed past swords and animal transportation. I can't say horse-drawn carriage because they don't have horses. And yet Freena has an android friend? She was just about to explain when a thunderous pounding echoed from the hidden door. The soldiers must have followed us, Freena said. She jumped up and climbed onto the table. A lantern hung from the ceiling. She pulled it, and an attic door swung down. You must leave. I'll take care of them. We all go or none of us go, I said in a moment of chivalrous emotion that I almost immediately regretted when I heard another thunderous boom that threatened to knock down the door. That's very sweet of you, but they won't hurt me, but I can't say the same for you. They must have figured out who you are. You mean others know? Alora said. I'm not sure how much they know, but the elite guard have been hunting my android friend for months. They definitely know something. She practically pushed us up into the attic. Don't say a word. She swung the door closed. We could hear the door open while we sat in darkness. Freena acted surprised, explained why her door was so tricky to find, something about a place to be left alone. The soldiers began banging things around, knocking over chairs and threatening to take her if she didn't tell them where we were. She continued to play dumb, but I knew the soldiers weren't buying it. Suddenly, she shouted in pain. One of them slapped her. I felt for the door, but Alora prevented me from opening it. Instead, she pushed me over and she opened it. I heard punches and shouts, then nothing. It happened so quickly, I couldn't even get to the door before it was all over. Hey, let me have one, I said, but it was too late. 4 soldiers lay crumpled and scattered throughout the room. You got them all? You could have saved one for me. Freema looked scared. You attack the elite guard. They'll put you to death for that. I wasn't going to let them slap you around, Alora said. We need to find a better hiding place. I know a place the elite guard would never dare enter. How do you feel about shamans? We stared at each other, unable to answer such a strange question since neither of us had ever met a shaman. He's a nice one, if it helps. If you feel that's the safest place, then lead the way, I said. She took us to a large temple-like building near the center of the city. 2 bald men wearing deep green robes met us at the gate and escorted us inside. They told Freema the shaman would not be back for a couple of days, but they would put us up until he returned. Alora and I had our minds on something entirely different. Before we entered the temple grounds, we spotted an unmoving storm cloud in the distance with a ladder extended to the ground. Alora's delanium scanner went off. The storm cloud contained the power source we needed to get off this planet. But how are we going to get up that ladder without the entire elite guard seeing us? I put it out of my head for now and focused on our current situation. We escaped the elite guard, found a friend, and a beautiful one at that, and had a safe place to sleep. For right now, that will have to be enough. The delanium isn't going anywhere. I lay my head down and fell asleep, dreaming of a melting smile. All right. That's 3 stories from the same gentleman. This is part of his series. I've got one more, just one more. If you don't like it, let me know. If you like it, let me know. I might continue using some of his information, but who knows? What about Bob? by Daniel Roberts. Rogers. We have to make a good first impression, I said to Laura while kicking a rock off the path into a garden. A priest I hadn't seen retrieved the rock and placed it back on the path, giving me a dirty look, in a holy way, of course. You need to stop kicking rocks. It never works out well for you. Get the rock. Focus. How do we impress the shaman? I still didn't know enough about their religion. The priests are not cooperative. Although I can understand why, none of them are happy with us for bringing the elite guard to their front door. Alora had a point. However, the priests have assured us that the elite guard will not enter a holy place, although it has been hard to sleep knowing they're chomping at the bit for us to put one toe outside the temple gate. I'm not so happy about it myself, I said. Hey, do you remember that priest who laughed at your joke yesterday? You know, the short guy with blonde hair? Alora asked. Yeah, Flynn or Fran, something like that. He may be willing to help us. I can't understand why, but he tolerated you better than any of the other priests. Ha, 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 I said sarcastically. Who knew androids could be so funny? We found our tolerant priest in the kitchen washing dishes. Hey, Fran, or is it Flynn? I reached out my hand for a handy handshake, forgetting we're not on Earth. It's Grinfo. He rinsed his hands, drying them on a towel, looking puzzled. He didn't know what to do with my hand and eventually elected to bow, then extend his hand, not in a handshake, but just pointing straight out. Alora whispered, how did you get Flynn or Fran? Okay, so I'm not good with names, I whispered back. Now be quiet and let me lead. Aye, aye, Captain. Alora stayed behind, watching me pour on the Drew charm. Sorry, Grinfo. Look, friend, can I call you friend? I guess, although we hardly know each other. But don't you feel like we do? Not really. Perhaps if you look deep inside, you'd see we're a lot alike. How deep? We're getting off the track here. I need to ask you for a huge favor. We need to make a good impression on the shaman. We really don't want to face the gentleman outside these gates. You mean you don't want to be arrested by the elite guard? If you want to get technical about it. Grinfo smiled. I don't know if this will help, but the shaman has an impossible name to pronounce. I've never been able to say it. Heck, not even the shaman can say it. He changed his name years ago, but before that, he had an easy name that even a child could pronounce. Joquelphelion. But the shaman has the right to change his name if he wants to. But I believe he'd love to hear someone say it. I've heard you come from a far country. Perhaps you will be able to pronounce it? We have come a long way, but how are we going to say it if you can't tell us what it is? The shaman had me chisel his name above the door of the temple. The first and last symbols are the same, but no one knows what they are. I'll take you there. Maybe you'll recognize them. Grinfo led the way, and we followed behind so as not to be overheard. I'm the linguist. Let me translate, Alora said. Don't forget who the captain is around here. Besides, I took a course in linguistics. One course? I know over 3,000 languages. I deciphered their language, and I programmed your translator. I know you're good and I appreciate your work, but I think I've got this one. When we arrived, we could hardly believe what we saw. Only three letters graced the archway. B-O-B. See what I mean, Grinfo said? I'm not sure if the gods gave this to him or if the shaman made it up. Do you really think it'll impress him? Grinfo nodded. Do you know what it says? I do, although I find it hard to believe that this name would impress anyone. You can't say it. Surely this is another one of your jokes. No joke. Do you want me to say it now or save it for the shaman? I don't want to hear it before the shaman, but you'd better be able to, or the shaman will throw you to the elite guard for lying. He really doesn't like liars. That night, Grinfo gave us an invitation from the shaman who had just arrived to have dinner with him. I told him about your predicament with the elite guard and your unique gift. He almost fell over when I told him you can pronounce his name. He's looking forward to it. Alora and I sat at the head table with the shaman and Griffo. A priest stood and gave a prayer. Then everyone chanted, the way provided, and began to eat. The shaman didn't look anything like I thought he would, a short man with a black and white braided beard, thick black and white disheveled hair, a burnt orange robe and hat, and several necklaces made from flowering vines. He looked like he belonged in a forest, not a temple. I spoke with Targon, the prime of the elite guard, and he told me that you, the shaman nodded to Alora, incapacitated some of his men. Is this true? Alora nodded. The shaman smiled. He didn't tell me why. Alora told him how Freena had hidden them from the elite guard and that the guards had slapped her around for not giving them up. I couldn't let them hurt her. She has been very kind to us. Good. Those pompous windbags deserve it, although I sense Targon hasn't told me everything. Do you know what he might be hiding? Alora and I looked at each other. We're not sure how much Targon knows, but he may suspect we're not from this world, but I'm not about to tell the shaman we're aliens. We shook our heads. Grinfell pulled me aside and asked if I was ready to speak the shaman's name. Anytime you're ready, I'm ready. The shaman wants you to say it to everyone, Grinfo said. I'm not much of a public speaker, but it's a reasonably simple speech, so I'll give it the old college try. Grinfo took me to the podium and introduced me, telling the crowd that I would speak the shaman's name. Murmurings and gasps filled the hall. I stood, taking a deep breath, and said it. A few priests fell out of their seats, but the majority oohed and aahed. Some tried to mimic me, but they failed miserably. Grinfell led me back to the head table. The shaman respectfully nodded. I've only heard my name once before, and you said it perfectly. I want you to stay. We will protect you, and I will try to smooth things over with the elite guard. Thank you very much, I said. I must have made a really good impression. The shaman motioned for Grinfo. Could you get me a drink, please? After Grinfo left, the shaman lowered his voice to where only Alora and I could hear. I know you two are gods. Only a god can say my name. Because a god gave it to me. He gave us a knowing smile with an expression that said it would be our little secret. Now that's a big twist. And that is the end of the stories for today. As I said, if you're interested in hearing more from this gentleman about their escapades, please let me know. Beyond3x5@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.